Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kuraitis. Today is August 30th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. Hope everyone is doing well. I know I didn't do a podcast yesterday, but boy, do we have a hurricane a-brewing this week. It will continue probably through the remainder of this year and maybe well into next. And of course, we do have a physical hurricane brewing down south. Looks like it's going to be dodging Puerto Rico, thank goodness, but it's going to be hitting Florida, and it's probably going to be a huge storm, perhaps a Category 4. The highest it goes up is Category 5, so this is going to be a huge hurricane that could hit Florida this weekend, Hurricane Dorian. But of course, the real hurricane that I'm talking about here is affecting the financial markets and the geopolitical markets for that place. Where do we even begin? We told you at the end of last month, the beginning of this month, and throughout this month, that August was going to be a highly volatile month, and our prediction has been proven correct. Markets were up, they've been down, they've been up, they've been down, they've been range-bound, but I mean, it's one tweet, it's one headline after the next. The trade war is escalating, it's de-escalating, it's escalating, it's de-escalating, back and forth. What's Thunder Thumbs going to tweet next? What are the Chinese going to come out and say next? It's anybody's guess. It's been a whipsaw ride for this past month. The central banks, the Federal Reserve, was on holiday. They were in their annual retreat out there in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. So there was no Federal Open Market Committee meeting this month. So there was no quote-unquote stimulus or any type of rescuing from the Federal Reserve this month. One of the main reasons we predicted volatility this month. Also, Congress was on vacation. They're on vacation every single day, but now they are officially on vacation for the month of August, so there wasn't going to be any type of fiscal stimulus or any type of rescue from the federal government. Now, I don't know why this economy would need rescuing, because if you listen to President Donald Trump, this is the greatest economy in U.S. history. So why would we need fiscal stimulus, and why would we need the Federal Reserve to engage in any type of, and what the president is calling for, is emergency monetary policy? You can't have it both ways. You cannot have a strong U.S. economy, if that's what you're going to claim, and then say we need fiscal stimulus and emergency monetary policy. It just does not make sense, folks. It's just clear as day. Does not make sense. It doesn't jive at all whatsoever. But we got a lot to get to, because volatility is here to stay. Our volatility model, which if you've been following this podcast, we talk about that here all the time. I will be updating that this weekend, and I will be continuing to give you updates on where that volatility model stands. But this volatility that we are witnessing is going to continue for the remainder of this year, and I think it's going to continue well into next year as well. This model is so simple, it's ridiculous, but it works. Now, obviously, it has to come down to the analysis of it, and that's more of an art than it is a science, but luckily for you, I'm an artist when it comes to economic and financial data. So stick with the Capital News. So much to get to. Where do we even start? We have Ray Dalio, the hedge fund manager. He wrote and posted another article to LinkedIn. I suggest you take the time to go on there on LinkedIn, find the article, take a read. It's not that long and it's very informative. We're going to talk about that here. We have Argentina was downgraded. Their debt was downgraded. We're going to talk about that. Continuation between China and U.S. What's some of the game theory that's taking place there? We have Thunder Thumbs tweeting out today on the euro and blaming U.S. businesses for not being able to handle small tariffs. You heard right. Continuing escalation between India and Pakistan. We have some problems elsewhere in the Middle East between Israel and Lebanon. And we have some basic headlines. Let's start with the basic headlines. The official NBS Manufacturing PMI Purchasing Managers Index in China fell unexpectedly to 49.5 in the month of August from 49.7 in July. Again, folks, this word unexpectedly. Are they not listening to the Capital News? How is this unexpected that China is slowing down? Remember, okay, we're at 49.5 on the PMI, the Purchasing Managers Index. 50 is our neutral level. If it's above 50, it's indicating expansion. If it's below 50, it's telling us there's contraction. So for the fourth straight month, we have seen a contraction in Chinese manufacturing. All right. This marked the fourth straight month of contraction in factory activity, indicating the need for more stimulus from the government to support the economy. That's opinion. There were falls in new orders, new export orders, and employment, with output growth slowing. Now, the article here says, it throws in some stimulus from the government. They don't have to stimulate. They can allow markets to clear on their own. They can allow markets to be big boys and big girls and deal with it. You don't have to throw more money at the problem and say that's going to fix it, because it won't. It won't. Now, that's manufacturing. Non-manufacturing, which is services, that beat, that edged up slightly. It's at 53.8 from 53.7. It's nothing major to write home about, but the 53.7 figure was an 8-month low. So it's trending upwards for the month. We'll continue to see what happens. Manufacturing and contraction, services up slightly. Okay? U.S. consumer sentiment revised down to a 3-year low. The University of Michigan's consumer sentiment for the U.S. was revised lower to 89.8 in August, well below 98.4 from the previous month. So you look at the beneath the hood here on U.S. consumer sentiment figures, not good, folks. Not good, because you look at the expectations, this gives a forward indicator, leading indicator. U.S. consumer is not as strong as the president wants you to believe and as the bankers want you to believe. Some good news to the friends up north in Canada. Canadian economy grows the most in 2 years. Nothing major to write home about, but it advanced 0.9% on quarter in the 3 months ending June. Okay, 0.9%. This is not fantastic by any stretch of the imagination, but it's their best growth in 2 years, so they can pat themselves on the back. Indian GDP, however, its growth is the weakest in 6 years. The Indian economy advanced 5% year-on-year in the second quarter of 2019. Now, if you've been paying attention to this podcast or just been paying attention to some of the international markets, India, their central bank, has been cutting interest rates for quite a while, and it doesn't make a difference, folks. The economy is slowing down, period, stop, end of story. So this calls for more stimulus. It's going to be kicking a dead horse. It's not going to do anybody any good. U.S. personal income grows the least in nearly a year, yet conversely, U.S. personal spending rises more than expected. This is, of course, on the back of that strong consumer we're told about, which, of course, is not a strong consumer. I'm going to tell you why right now, because you have data coming out from the Federal Reserve that says there is more debt on the consumer than there was during the Great Recession, okay, in the lead up to the Great Recession. Credit cards, folks, credit cards, credit cards, credit cards. That's why bankers come out and say that the U.S. consumer is very strong. Well, why would they say that? Well, because they're charging them 30% to buy crap that they don't need, that they can't afford, and on top of it, they're going to pay 30% a month. Makes a whole bunch of sense, doesn't it? So that's there. You have the Italian economy stalling in the second quarter of this year. No growth, flat, boom, nada. But everything's so good. It's just fantastic everywhere. And then you have President Trump saying, well, look what they're doing over there in Europe. They got negative interest rates, quantitative easing, and they're going into recession. Yet somehow, Donny Boy Thunder Thumbs thinks that's fantastic. Let's import that stupidity here in the United States, which we've already basically adopted. We've already basically adopted it. We're just shy of going into negative territory. We're at 2%. We can get back to zero like that and then go into negative territory like that if the Federal Reserve wants to do it. I wouldn't be surprised if they do. So those are the headlines. Now, to Ray Dalio's article, again, hedge fund manager for Bridgewater Associates, the world's largest hedge fund, okay? This is one of the few people that I listen to if he's giving an interview or he publishes an article. I don't agree with everything he says, but it's worth listening to. You don't become the world's largest hedge fund manager by accident, okay? So he does his studies. He does his research. I advise when he speaks, you listen at least somewhat. So Ray Dalio and his company, they are pretty much financial and economic historians, which I admire because I think it provides perspective, it provides context, and while history may not repeat, it certainly does rhyme. And throughout this article, Ray Dalio outlines a lot of similarities to the mid to late 1930s, early 1940s. And we've had these conversations here before. But one of the key things that Ray Dalio mentions is that central banks and their policies are pretty much going to be rendered ineffective this time around, which is exactly what we have been saying here since this podcast has been live starting in February of this year. And I have been saying this for a lot longer, believe me when I tell you. We have been predicting this. Check out our book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing, The Cynic's Guide to Investing in the Era of Too Big to Fail. It pays to be a cynic. Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, hardback, paperback, and a Kindle version. Check it out. We've been talking about this for years. This book was published back in 2015. We predicted the continuation of the bull market, and we said afterwards, look out. Look out. Markets will have their day. They will pull back this nonsense. And that's exactly what we are in the midst of now. And we told you time and time again here, almost on a daily basis, Econ 101, diminishing marginal returns. And that's exactly what Ray Dalio was talking about. Central banks, their policies are going to be rendered ineffective. It's done. They were able to reflate the markets for the past decade. They were able to inflate the markets over the past decade. They were attempting to reflate and inflate financial assets because they got decimated during the Great Recession. That makes sense that they got decimated during the Great Recession. They should not have reflated, they should not have inflated, but that's what they do. It shows you who the central banks work for. That's why we are major advocates here at the Capital News and say it on a near daily basis to end the Fed. Okay? Wall Street got bailed out, major corporations got bailed out, even foreign corporations got bailed out with Federal Reserve notes. You didn't. So that tells you who they work for. End the Fed and abolish the federal income tax. So Ray Dalio's out there now saying, look, they're going to be rendered ineffective. On top of that, you have huge income and inequality gaps, which we talk about here all the time. That is likely to lead, and it has been leading to, populism, political populism the world over. Political populism on the left, political populism on the right. Think Bernie Sanders, think Donald Trump. You've been paying attention to recent podcasts. We're talking about Italy. In that coalition breaking down between the major party on the far left and the major party on the far right, that coalition is breaking down. Can't make heads or tails of all of this nonsense, but this is what happens when you have craziness the world over. You have strange alliances, politics. There is no politics. There is no unity. It's all divisive. We're seeing that around the world. We have the protests in Hong Kong. You had the yellow vest riots in France. You have Brexit that is continuing to unfold. You have here in the United States a presidential election where it's becoming more and more divisive. I mean, and we ain't seen nothing yet, believe me when I tell you. So Ray Dalio is predicting that. Again, diminishing marginal returns and rendering central bank policy ineffective, and an increase in political populism on both sides, because the population is saying, enough of this. This doesn't make sense. We have a handful of people who have become extremely wealthy over the past decade. They have been bailed out, and the average Joe has not. People aren't that stupid. They're waking up. They're starting to see what's going on here. And this is why you're seeing this history sort of repeating itself, because this is exactly what took place in the 1930s, early 1940s. So on top of that, you also had trade wars. Can you believe this? It's eerily reminiscent. You have trade wars and you had currency wars. That's where we are right now. The unfortunate thing after all of this, and let's pray that this doesn't happen, but it's very likely to, you also end up with war, physical war, not just trade wars, not just currency wars, not paper wars, but physical, hot-blooded wars. Let's hope it doesn't happen. But when you talk about India and Pakistan escalating, when you talk about a trade war between South Korea and Japan escalating, when you talk about the trade war between the United States and China escalating, de-escalating, whatever the tweet is for the day, when you have us staging a coup in Venezuela, when you have the saber rattling with us in Iran, when you have the president of Lebanon declaring war or saying that it is a declaration of war on Israel because Israel had some drone attacks recently in Lebanon. I mean, pick your combat, folks. Pickett. I mean, this is not setting up for something good. All of these situations would have to be diffused. And you still got Rocket Man in North Korea firing off missiles. So, I mean, spin the globe, stop your finger on any country, and there's a problem. And it could be a big problem. So this is extremely reminiscent of the 1930s, 1940s. Again, I advise you to take a look at Ray Dalio's article, and this is something to pay attention to. The other thing that Ray Dalio has been stating, and that we are in agreement with, and also have been stating here as well, is be diversified with precious metals, and particularly, obviously, gold. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, have some diversification and stay vigilant with what's going on, because we could have an unwinding in these markets very quickly. Very quickly. And like we've been saying here, we are anticipating base case, that U.S. equities are going to decline by 40%. That would take us back to 2016 levels. I think it's going to be much worse than that, but that's my base case. And you have to recall earlier this year, following my call on that, Ray Dalio also came out with his team and said, yeah, we're going to see a major decline in U.S. equities because we've reached peak profits, peak earnings, and they are also anticipating a 40% decline. So you're not just hearing it from me, some guy doing a podcast. This is also coming from the world's largest hedge fund manager. Now, nobody's right 100% of the time. Nobody is. I'm not. Ray Dalio isn't. A whole host of people are not right 100% of the time. But, you know, pay attention and be prepared, if nothing else. Okay. Now, there are some other things that Ray Dalio says in this article that I disagree with. He talks about how governments are likely to come in, how central bankers are likely to come in and try to create equilibrium in the markets. I wholeheartedly disagree with this notion. He's trying to pretty much explain how the economy works and how the federal government and how central bankers are going to come in to try to save it. No, not even close. It's the policies of the federal government and central banks that caused the problem. It's basically saying, look, the federal government and the Federal Reserve acts as both the arsonist and the firefighter. You can't have it both ways. It's having the federal government and the Federal Reserve act as the guy who breaks your legs, but then gives you a pair of crutches. It doesn't work like that. They are the ones throwing things out of equilibrium. They are not going to be bringing it back into equilibrium. It is the job of the marketplace to find equilibrium. Period. Stop. End of story. Not the job of the federal government, Uncle Sam, or the central banks. No way, no how. So that's that. We have the Argentine. Their debt has been downgraded. Remember, it was only, what, a couple few weeks ago that their market sold off 48%? 48% in one day? Because of the political shenanigans going on down there. There's currently a quote-unquote free market president, but there are elections that are indicating that the socialist candidate, the anti-free market candidate, if you will, is going to win and become the next president of Argentina. So now you have to pay attention to all of that nonsense. And now you have S&P, Moody's, and Fitch. These are the big ratings agencies saying, you've been downgraded, and you are on default watch for all intents and purposes. If you remember your history, Argentina defaulted on their bonds, a little more than a decade ago. So a lot of people haven't learned their lessons. This is a cycle. This is rinse and repeat down there. These people obviously don't know how to manage their money, or they do know how to manage their money, and they're just, you know, baiting in a whole bunch of suckers. We'll take your money, and we're not going to pay you back. Dollars, pesos, or anything else for that matter. So you get what you pay for, and a lot of investors are going to take a huge haircut, because what Argentina is trying to do is they are trying to roll over short-term debt and turn it into long-term debt. Now, of course, investors have to go for this, and most investors don't want to go for this. This is an indication that they are not going to be able to pay their debt, obviously. Now, not coincidentally, you also have such a policy that is sort of taking root here in the United States, because we talked very, very slightly, few podcasts ago, of how the United States is once again considering the long bond. Now, the longest bond we have is the 30-year bond. Now you have Donald Trump and the Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin contemplating a 50-year bond and a century bond, a 100-year bond. Now, why would you do this? Because you're going bankrupt. That's why you would do that. You're trying to kick the can as far down the road as you possibly can, because there is a softening in the appetite for debt, for sovereign debt. I mean, you're in Europe, you're getting a negative yield. You're in Japan, you're getting a negative yield. You're in the United States, you're getting virtually nothing, and that's where it's headed, especially if the Federal Reserve continues to cut interest rates. And we anticipate that they will continue to cut interest rates at some point this year and probably continuing through next year as well, especially as it becomes more and more evident that we are in a slowdown and we are in a recession. So this is not good, folks. This could be another shot across the bow with Argentina being downgraded by the ratings agencies. Again, these rating agencies did not do anybody a service during the great financial crisis, because the way it works is they're paid by the banks who want their products rated. So how do you think these ratings agencies are going to rate them? They're going to rate them as strong as possible. They stamped a whole bunch of junk AAA a decade ago, a whole bunch of subprime junk loans, junk mortgages were stamped AAA because these ratings agencies get paid by the banks. I mean, if they stamped them what they really were, junk, no Wall Street bank would have went back to them. That's how the game is played. So right now, you have these rating agencies who have to look out for their own credibility if they even care about it. So they have to come out, and they downgraded Argentina. The serious question is what are they going to do with corporate bonds? Because we've had multiple podcasts on this topic. The corporate ticking time bomb that most definitely exists. Will this be a catalyst? We have a huge amount of triple B rated bonds. Undoubtedly, a vast majority of these bonds should be rated junk, but currently they are not. And if and when they are rated junk and downgraded to junk, and they are only one notch above junk status, you will have a massive amount of selling, because companies, investment funds, they are not allowed by their own charters, they are not allowed to own junk. They have to own investment grade bonds. All right. So I don't necessarily know if that's going to be a catalyst, but it is going to be a huge domino that continues to cause more and more problems and will prolong this recession, this coming recession, and maybe perhaps even depression, if you will. And I'm not being hyperbolic. I am not exaggerating. I truly believe this. So if the rating agencies attempt to save face, if they attempt to maintain their credibility, they're going to have to downgrade a lot of these corporate bonds that are rated triple B. Believe me when I tell you, and it will not be pretty. This could also come from a catalyst with Deutsche Bank, which we've talked about here extensively. They could go down, they could suffer some major hits, and GE, General Electric. We just had the accounting forensic auditor, Harry Markopoulos, the guy who outed Bernie Madoff in that $50 billion Ponzi scheme a decade ago during the great financial crisis, come out and say, well, you know, I think General Electric is cooking the books, and if history is any indicator, they could be bankrupt within 4 months, because he was just saying, well, look at Enron, look at WorldCom. Once accounting fraud allegations were made public, both of those companies were bankrupt within 4 months. And he is saying that GE is bigger than Enron and WorldCom combined. So if GE goes down or gets bailed out somehow, that's it. Believe me when I tell you, that will be it. That will be the end of the story, because trust and confidence will be lost. Liquidity will dry up. And that'll be it, folks. We have Donald Trump tweeting about the euro, how the euro has been weakening against the U.S. dollar, talking about the strength of the U.S. dollar being at all-time highs, and saying, well, you would think that would be a good thing unless you are a manufacturer or exporter. Then we're getting whacked by the euro and the European Central Bank. And of course, this was a way of digging in against the Federal Reserve. Now, again, the president is misunderstanding, I guess, what's going on here, because if he wants to say that the United States is a strong economy, the strongest in the world, in the best that it has ever been in U.S. history, which of course is not true. But if he wants to make these claims and then also witness a strong dollar, that's what you get. That is a byproduct of a strong economy. Now, this economy is not that strong, folks, but it is one of the strongest in the world, if not the strongest in the world right now, on a relative basis. And you have to look at things on a relative basis, because we're not investing in Mars, we're not investing in Jupiter, we're here on planet Earth. So you go around the planet, where's the best place to be? Who's the best looking girl at the dance? And right now it's the United States of America. So again, the president wants to complain about a strong dollar, yet he wants to tell you that this is the strongest economy ever. You're going to get a stronger currency if you have a stronger economy. It makes sense. This isn't rocket science here. So he's complaining against this again. And I don't think he fully understands, I guess, how trade works. And again, I really laid his advisor, Peter Navarro, who's a complete idiot and needs to be fired. But nevertheless, he doesn't seem to understand that a lot of input goods and intermediate goods to the production process are imported. And if you have a stronger dollar, it makes them cheaper on a relative basis. That's a good thing, not a bad thing. That's a good thing. And if you look at the weakness of the euro, that's a function of the fact that they have negative interest rates. That's a function of the fact that they have quantitative easing. That's a function of the fact that Europe is in a recession for all intents and purposes. That's where it's headed. So again, what does the president want here? Does he want a recession here in the United States? Because he's calling for lower interest rates and he's calling for quantitative easing. He thinks it worked before, it's going to work again. It's not going to work again. Maybe you get a short boost, maybe you get a short adrenaline hit off of it, but then you're done. You're going to be kicking a dead horse. Believe me when I tell you. So I don't get what the president's doing. I don't know where he's getting this advice from. If this is his own, he needs some new thinking. If it's somebody else's, he needs to fire them immediately. Then you also have Thunder Thumbs tweeting out, and I can't believe this happened, but it did. And it's on the record because he tweeted it out there. Blaming U.S. businesses for not being able to handle what he is claiming to be small tariffs. He's saying, look, these are weak and mismanaged companies, and they are complaining about tariffs, and they are blaming them and using that as an excuse. And he says, I can't blame them for using this as an excuse, but he is saying U.S. companies are weak and they are mismanaged. Now, there's no question that there are a ton of companies in this country and around the world that are weak and are mismanaged. We talk about that, those companies here all the time. Those are zombie companies. They need to go by the wayside. They need to be liquidated. They need to go into bankruptcy. If they can come out stronger, so be it. If they go bye-bye, so be it. That does need to happen. But here's the twist. If you have Donald Trump calling for lower interest rates and for quantitative easing, guess what's going to happen with those zombie companies? They're going to continue to exist. So which way does he want it? I don't think he understands what he's doing, or he's just trying to hedge himself on every side of every argument, because he doesn't want to take responsibility for anything bad or negative that's taking place. He just wants to say it's somebody else's fault for all the negative. Anything that's good, it's his doing. Terrible leadership as far as I'm concerned, but that's what he does. That's his style. Some people love it. Some people hate it. I certainly don't like it. It's not what I voted for. It's poor leadership at a time when this country truly needs leadership and unity. It doesn't need a lack of leadership and more divisiveness. And that's exactly what we are witnessing, unfortunately. So to blame U.S. businesses for not being able to handle small tariffs, that's not good, folks. The president should not be talking about like that about U.S. companies, especially in the midst of a trade war with China. I mean, that's more ammunition for China. To say, well, what's the president believe? Does he believe that it's starting to affect U.S. businesses? Well, it has been. It has been. I mean, we have farmers declaring bankruptcy all over the place, multi-year highs on filing bankruptcies and multi-year highs on delinquencies, which just means they are just a couple steps away from filing bankruptcy. This is not good. This is a direct result of these tariffs, of this trade war. You have supply chains which have shifted, which we have been telling you for months was going to happen. Okay? The Chinese don't want to buy soybeans from the United States anymore. They don't want to buy wheat. They don't want to buy corn. Guess where they're going? They're going to Brazil. They're going to Canada. They're going to Russia. And they're going to other countries as well, but those are the big three. Canada, Russia, and Brazil. You think Prime Minister Trudeau of Canada is just going to roll over? You think President Putin of Russia is just going to roll over, or President Bolsonaro of Brazil is just going to roll over if and when some sort of trade deal is struck between China and the United States? You think they're just going to say, oh, well, yeah, we knew this was only going to be temporary. You can go ahead and screw our farmers over now. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. It's going to be very difficult for U.S. farmers to regain this market share with China. And who's going to believe the Chinese that they're going to make good this time? And who's going to believe even Donald Trump that he's going to stick with the deal if there is a deal? And I am growing more and more skeptical every day that there is actually going to be a deal of any significance. I don't know who's going to trust it. I mean, you can't. Given the rhetoric and the actions of both sides, you couldn't trust any type of deal that came down the pike. The other thing, I know, I didn't do a podcast on Thursday, but the markets rallied. And the markets rallied another percent pretty much across the board. And they did so off of headlines, this time out of China, saying that they are looking for effective communication and they do not want to further escalate the trade war. Instead of retaliating to Donald Trump's latest round of tariffs, they said, we want to continue effective communication, but we would like to see these tariffs removed in order to strike a deal, in order to continue the conversation. Well, that ain't going to happen. Tariff man is not going to come down and now cut tariffs to continue the conversation. He's not going to do it. Believe me, he is not going to do it. It will make him look weak. Here, this is the game theory that's being played right now. China is attempting to come out and look like the rational player. You have Donald Trump, for all intents and purposes, has been negotiating with himself. We're in a hurry. We're not in a hurry. We're in a hurry. We're not in a hurry. Boom. We're going to slap more tariffs because now we're in a hurry. Well, last week, just a couple days ago, you said we're not in a hurry. No, we're in a hurry now. President Xi isn't living up to the trade truce. Boom, we're going to smack them with more tariffs. They retaliate. They're going to stop buying U.S. agricultural products, and round we go. Okay, so Donald Trump, for all intents and purposes, is negotiating with himself, but now you have the Chinese starting to play ball and starting to come out more into the media and say, all right, well, we don't want to have further escalation. We want to have effective communication, but some things have to be done in order to make sure that this doesn't happen. And one of those key factors is these tariffs that have just been increased need to be taken off. They need to be taken off. And if you really want a deal, Mr. President Donald J. Trump, you're going to have to remove all tariffs on all, what, 500 and some billion dollars? All of them need to be removed in order to strike a deal. There ain't no way this is going to happen. None whatsoever. Because there's too many demands from the United States that China's not going to do, and there's too many demands from China that the United States is not going to do. So, and the other thing, once you read past that basic headline there that Chinese are looking for effective communication, it's predicated off of these tariffs being removed. And it was, the other key word in this statement was, we're not going to retaliate to this increase in tariffs immediately. We're not going to retaliate immediately. Well, that means they might do it later, right? That's what that means. So this is just headline driven. And I think, you know, the president, because he is hanging his hat on the economy and the stock market, this is a huge weapon that can be used against Donald Trump, because all the Chinese now have to do, if they want, is they can now string along Donald Trump in the United States. Just we get closer and closer to election time and boom, China can say, there's no deal. There's no deal. We're done. And now Donald Trump is in a whole lot of trouble because he has been hanging his hat on a strong economy and a strong stock market. An inflated stock market, an inflated economy, a bubble economy, and a bubble stock market. But nevertheless, he doesn't care. He doesn't care. If it looks good, it's his doing. If it's bad, it's somebody else's fault. And so this is going to become very, very interesting, politically speaking and economically speaking, because this whole situation could be dragged out for quite some time. China can say, boom, we're done. Markets could sell off bigly, huge, if you will. Okay, that could happen. That could happen in an attempt to undermine the election or the re-election bid of Donald J. Trump. Now, I also believe both sides want a boogeyman so they can blame both sides. Donald Trump wants a boogeyman. He wants to be able to blame the Federal Reserve, which he will continue to do. And he will want to continue to blame China if he has to. And he most definitely will. Now, the difference is which country, U.S., China, who is willing to take the hit, economically speaking? Who is willing to put the country ahead of economics in GDP? Will it be the Americans? I'm skeptical of this because of our me, 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 now culture that we have in this country, especially against the political divisiveness that we have. So you might have Trump supporters who are saying, yeah, we're willing to sidestep GDP growth in the economy. We can put that by the wayside, even though that's what they've been clinging to. But we really need to beat China because China's the enemy. China's the boogeyman. We have to go after them, and they're not playing ball. So we're willing to put country first and economic second. That could happen. But you think the Democrats are going to get on board with this and a whole bunch of anti-Trumpers? No way, no how. Conversely, do you think the Chinese will get on board? Because we know from Chinese state media, and this may even have been a comment, I can't recall, but it was most definitely stated by somebody and probably high up, maybe even President Xi himself, basically telling the Chinese people to prepare for the Long March. Prepare for the Long March. This is basically in reference to buckle up. We're willing to sacrifice GDP and economic growth to outdo, outwit, and outplay the United States of America. Basically meaning you are going to put country ahead of yourself, ahead of the economy, and all that jazz. Now, will the Chinese play ball with that, or will they revolt? That's a serious question. Both could happen. They could get behind it, and they can say, yeah, we're going to take down the United States economically, because, and we're going to take a hit too. China would say this, we're going to take a hit too, but they might be of the belief that they will bounce back faster and stronger than the United States will. Because if China goes down, the global economy goes down. If the United States goes down, the global economy goes down. It's simply a question of which country might be willing to take the hit. Okay, we know right now that Donald Trump is not willing to take the hit. He's not, because he's hanging his hat on the stock market and the economy. If he had done what I have been saying for a long time, to not take ownership of the stock market and the economy, he could have won this trade war by now, because he could have done a whole host of things that really would have put China in a pickle, really could have put him in a corner. He hasn't done those things. And now he has exposed himself to his ego. He loves the stock market. He was making references to the stock market again, saying if the Federal Reserve cut interest rates, the stock market would rally like never before. I mean, he wants a bubble. He doesn't care. Believe me, he does not care what's going to come on the other side of this. He just wants things to look good as long as they can. And, if it looks good for Donald Trump, that's all he cares about, believe me when I tell you. And I take no pride in saying that. I voted for the guy, but this is not draining the swamp tactics. This is not a strong and vibrant economy as we are led to believe. Are there pockets of strength? Sure. But a lot of this is continuation of trend. The business cycle, like I said earlier, was extended by Donald Trump and his administration with the tax cuts and the deregulation. But that's all it was. It was extended. It did not outlaw recessions. It's not how it works. Recessions, again, are a healthy process of the business cycle. I don't like them. Who wants to perhaps lose their job? Who wants to lose their home? Nobody. But when you have these excesses, which are caused by fiscal policy and monetary policy, this is what you get. This is what happens. And this is going to be perhaps the mother of all recessions. And again, it could turn into a depression. I would not be surprised. So this is August 30th. We still have another day. And who knows what's going to happen with the storms, with the hurricane down south, down in Florida. Hopefully everybody is prepared. If you have the ability to evacuate, get out of Dodge, I would suggest. But stay prepared and stay vigilant with what's going on down there. Because that's not going to be pretty for the U.S. economy either. That won't be pretty either. So there's a lot more to get to, but you know what? I'm just going to wrap this up here. We'll see if I do a podcast over the weekend. I hope to have a couple more videos posted to our website, thecapitalnews.com. And obviously that will also be posted to our LinkedIn page, our Facebook page, and YouTube, our YouTube channel, The Capital News. And of course, you can link to all of that from our website, thecapitalnews.com. We do have a couple videos on there as well that I also would appreciate if you took the time to take a listen and take a look. I think they're beneficial. We're talking about some major financial and economic data points that we talk about here on a daily basis, but this obviously is a visual presentation for you. And we're trying to sort of pinpoint when we think a recession is likely to really transpire here in the U.S. so we can be prepared, so we can have a plan, get diversified, vigilant, all that good stuff that we talk about here all the time. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, please enjoy your weekend. It's a long weekend. So again, we'll see if I do anything on Monday, but enjoy your Labor Day holiday, and we'll catch you here next week. Please like, share, subscribe, get the word out, and leave your comments. We do love hearing from you. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.